One begins the eternal learning curve. The more you know, the more you realize you have more to learn.
At the end of the day, you can be as good as gold, but if you don't have passion for wine, no matter how good you are, it isn't going to work.
And Mother Nature is your partner all the way until it's done.
Whereas the U.S., you go into a big grocery store and you have 2,000 different glass bottles full of wine.
My father told me, never work for money. Work to accomplish something. Making money is the result of doing something right.
The bottom line is, it's all about the soil.
Well, the results are really the benefit of our doing our homework.
What makes winemaking so interesting and fascinating is that every single year it's been different.
There was definitely a sense that we were all sort of in a pioneering endeavor. It was fun.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle and welcome to podcast number 131. This week, we feature Bee Cellars co-founder and principal, Duffy Keyes.
Over the past year, there have been several new tasting rooms and caves constructed in Napa Valley, but likely none with the service approach of Bee Cellars. We spoke with Bee Cellars co-founder and principal Duffy Keyes just a few short weeks after the new tasting room opened. But to be fair, calling the property a tasting room falls short of the full picture. We are here at the new location of Bee Cellars in Oakville, and I'm here with Duffy Keyes, and you are our partner as well as...
I am the co-founder, so my business partner Jim Borsak and I started the company in 2002, and 2003 was our first vintage.
Great. And this location just opened, I believe you said, 10 weeks ago.
So actually, yes, we're about almost 60 days into it, and very happy with how things are going. It is kind of an amazing feat to think that in July of 2012 we acquired the property and we are open just about 2 years later. So for Napa time standards, it was a pretty amazing feat.
It was, I would say, very amazing. Nothing happens very quick in the valley, and to have something turn around that quickly is very impressive. My compliments.
Well, thank you for that. We have great neighbors, and I think testament to our team, to everybody who was involved, to rally the support of our neighbors, get them involved in the project, and as a result, they felt like they were contributing to what would end up being a good physical plant. And, you know, they've been in business, you know, 30, 40 years. We've been in business less than 10, so we had a lot to learn. So I think you could call it a joint effort, and I think the product, as you get around, you'll see for yourself that it came together quite nicely.
Excellent. It just simply makes sense to involve your neighbors, and especially in the Napa Valley, because people could be a bit sensitive to new wineries these days. And first thing, I want to also mention the location, which is on the Oakville Cross Road, which is probably more on the Silverado Trail side, I guess, if I'm thinking.
Yeah, we're
properly.
A little bit closer to the Silverado Trail. At the head of each of the Silverado Trail, which is to our east, and Highway 29, or what turns into Main Street as you head towards St. Helena, on the west. So at the west end, you have Opus One, the Napa Wine Company. You come a little bit east, you have Silver Oak. My neighbor, catty corner to us, is Groth. And to my just immediately to my east, a little bit further, is Gargiulo Vineyards, Plumpjack, and then Rudd. So terrific neighborhood, and we're happy to be part of it. And one thing I promise my neighbors is I won't bring down the neighborhood.
Good for you. Good company for sure. Yeah. The original tasting room that I experienced some time ago was over on, just about in Calistoga, if I'm not mistaken, right on Silverado Trail.
That's right.
So you have this facility, a number of structures, including a cave that you're building, obviously, for the practical purposes of being a cellar, as well as an entertainment area. You've brought the restaurant experience to the tasting room itself. It's really, as you say, a campus that's really all-encompassing for your needs and what you're going to be able to do, right?
That's right. We had a chance to think about what could we do to present our wines in the best possible light, and what could we do to dimensionalize the experience that Napa Valley has provided for, you know, many generations. And if we If we go back to a point that my business partner Jim and I had from inception, which is the food-centric nature of our wines, and it comes from where we started, which was a multi-vineyard, multi-varietal blending strategy. So we're taking the many different terroirs, the different AVAs that the valley represents, and the different varietals, and we were figuring out which varietals and which terroir pairs well together. We created these series of blends. And in doing that, we learned one thing, because we didn't have a tasting room in the early days. So our outlet for customer feedback was through restaurants. And it became interesting to us that these chef-centric restaurants, particularly where they were proprietarily owned, or there was the restaurant was kind of built around a chef experience, they embraced our wines in that they didn't fall into a pattern of, you know, a typical Bordeaux wine had to go with a certain type of food. So they felt that our wines gave them greater flexibility to work with. We started thinking about that, and it became, I mean, it's no secret that wine and food goes well together, but for the most part, we go to a restaurant, we're given a menu, we choose our food, we're then given a wine list, we hope that the wine that we choose doesn't change the nature of the food, but we all know that food changes the way wine tastes. And as we got more and more thinking about the kind of entertainment or tasting experience, we decided that we would do food and wine pairings. We would put the kitchen in with the living room. We would have, so there's like no hidden kitchen where, you know, the real cooking goes on. It's quite the contrary. You come in, you'll see Chef Green. You're met at the entry by our concierge out on the patio. And all of your five senses are working through this food and wine pairing experience.
For sure, the one thing you see when you come here is this whole hospitality feel. Very warm experience. I mean, even me coming in with the construction going on, you get that feeling walking into this building. Let's talk a little bit about your background. You've done all right in the hospitality industry.
Well, thank you. So I had the chance to work for the Four Seasons Hotel Company pretty much my entire career. I joined Four Seasons shortly after their first hotel opened in the United States called Four Seasons. So that was in Georgetown in, I think it was 1980 or 81, and I joined in 82. So it was very much in the beginnings of the Four Seasons Hotel Company. And over that 20 plus year experience, I had a chance to visit many corners of the earth to participate in the opening of nearly 50 to 60 hotels. So I got a really good cross-section of experiences, and if anybody can replicate the construction of building a Four Seasons hotel or a building, but it's how it worked that made the difference. And we kept it, oddly enough, simple to the things that really matter, and it's all about trying to anticipate, you know, what guests need, and that sounds trite, but, you know, getting the wake-up call correct every day for thousands and thousands of rooms around the world sounds like it's easy. It's not, right? So getting a tasting right, you know, every day sounds like it's easy, but it's not. It takes planning and it takes execution. So how do we represent that? Our concierge is who you make your reservation booking with. And so that individual is concerned about how you're gonna get here, where you're staying. Can we help you with any other reservations, neighboring wineries, neighboring restaurants, finding a hotel room, getting a car, a driver, any of those elements that make your trip to get here hassle-free. So we take on that responsibility. And there aren't many wineries that will actually do that and who are networked well enough to be able to pull that off with a sense of, you know, promise and delivery. We take that through to dietary concerns because we are serving food. So we talk to you about whether it's, you know, any shellfish aversions, you know, anything at all that's dietary. So we make note of that. And as you'll see later in your own tasting experience, everything is highly personalized. So your menu that you receive when you sit down has your name on it, Ray Pfister, today's date. It has the wines that you're going to be served, it has the food that you're pairing it with, and it also includes the wines that you'll taste in the caves and in the production building as you're on tour. So it's very well thought out, and people realize that we've gone to a bit of trouble for them.
A bit of trouble, I'd say. Yeah, that's a very impressive experience for anybody coming to taste, because it sounds like one of the biggest parts of it is a bit of education. No,
no, for sure. And you know, the nomenclature has been tours and tastings. And if you've been to many different wineries, the tours and tastings, you know, can homogenize. Here we've tried to think of them, again, it's probably part of my own travel background, but we provide treks and wine journeys, and we have guides and navigators that create that experience for you. So we have a little bit of fun with it. You'll see our bees, our chickens, you'll see our market garden, you'll spend time interacting with different people that you'll, whether it's in production, if we're making wine, you'll be able to meet our production winemaker, you'll see people doing punch downs, we'll be able to taste things out of a tank, we'll be able to taste things out of barrels. So that's all part of the overall experience. And when you come back from your trek, you enter the hospitality house. Your guide welcomes you with a cold towel in the summer to refresh, or a warm towel in the winter. And so you feel as though you're in a very special place. And it's by design, it's comfortable, there's no pretension, you're having fun, you're being well looked after. And the wines, we think, will stand on their own merit, and you're going to be the judge of that when you taste later today.
Great. Well, I look forward to that. And let's talk about the wines, because that's really, when we get down to it, what we're all about. You have some farming here on the property, but give me an idea of what you actually are farming acreage-wise versus are you leasing outside of, or buying fruit outside of that?
So, good question. On the property, we have planted right now about 4.5 acres of our total 12-acre footprint. And next spring, we'll pick up another couple of acres on a plot just to the west of what's already planted, and then on the bench behind the market garden, we'll pick up another 0.5 acre. So I think when it's all said and done, we'll be right at about 6, close to 7 acres, which on a long-term basis will represent about 15% of our production capability. So we'll have that estate fruit component. It'll be predominantly Cabernet, which is what the Oakville area is known for, and we'll also plant a little bit of Cab Franc. In terms of the rest of our portfolio, we have really terrific grower relationships, and that is the essence of what started us and will continue as we expand to our total case production, which probably over the next 5 to 10 years will take us upwards of 15 to maybe 20,000 cases. This year's harvest, we're rated about 8,000 cases. So if you think about where we started with this multi-vineyard, multi-varietal strategy, that takes Our approach takes the best growing area for whether it's Syrah or Sangiovese, Petit Syrah, different terroir for different cab clones, rootstock. So we've identified all of these variables. We found the growers, and most of our vineyards are predominantly growers as opposed to growers and producers. So by example, B-Cellars, as we continue to evolve, will be one of the very few wineries that has access to all 6 of Bechstoffer's heritage vineyards. So you might see those names as Las Piedras or Missouri Hopper, Born, Tokalon, Dr. Crane, George III. Well, those 6 vineyards represent the heritage of Napa Valley's most significant vineyards, now owned and collected under one name, the Bechstoffer family. So we feel very proud, and we've worked hard to become the single winery that can have access to all 6 of those vineyards and then represent them in a very beautiful tasting room in the caves called the Bechstoffer Heritage Room. So that's an example of having these great relationships and long-term agreements that give us blocks or rows or acreage inside each of these various vineyards. The same plan holds true with whether it's Usabelli, our source for Viognier, Giuliana, our long-term source for Sauvignon Blanc, Stagecoach, which represents Syrah for us, Cab, and Sangiovese. The Anitok Vineyard up at Atlas Peak, which is owned by the Antonori family, is again another source for us for our Sangiovese program. And then a multitude of well-known Cabernet estates, whether that's Ehrlich or O'Shaughnessy right here in Oakville, to Llewellyn, Kennefic Ranch. So we have Calistoga AVA, we have St. Helena, Oakville, Rutherford. So it's quite diverse, and it's what I believe makes B-Sellers wines as special and consistent as they are from year to year.
You're very well covered. I'm curious for my sake about Sangiovese, because there are not a lot of Sangiovese growers here in Napa Valley, and yet it can be an amazing fruit here.
It is, and it's amazing for a lot of reasons. And again, because of the food-centric nature of our wine production strategy, having a Napa Valley-inspired Super Tuscan was on the list of could we pull it off. And so that put Kurt Venge, who's our winemaker, on the challenge block, basically. And he exceeded every expectation we had. First of all, getting his hands on these fantastic vineyards who, and as you say, there aren't many who are growing Sangiovese. A lot of it just out of pure economics gave way to Cabernet, but those who have been committed to Sangiovese know how to grow it. What Kirk did on our behalf with our Sangiovese is taking it through the Reposo method. So that, as you probably know, takes the skins of the Sangiovese while the Sangiovese is going dry, puts it back in the cellar. They get kind of, you know, crinkly and dried, not necessarily completely dried out, but you bring those skins back, put them on screens, and run the fermented Sangiovese over that. Gives it a little bit of a richer color, so we can produce the Sangiovese on its own as a single bottling, but it makes up the anchor in our Super Tuscan that we call Blend 24, which is Sangiovese, Cabernet, and a little bit of Syrah. So very unique composition of varietals, and it's easy for me to say, biased, but it's a huge home run, and it's well regarded, well received. You can find it in a lot of different Italian and Mediterranean style restaurants. And again, it's a testament to Kirk and his willingness to be resourceful and to make just terrific wines.
Yeah, my compliments. I'm glad to see that on your tasting menu. I see B-Sellers available where I'm at in Wisconsin, and I'm a little curious about your distribution in general. Where can we find B-Sellers around the country?
So we're still relatively small, and that's kind of the chicken and the egg thing, you know, between who the distributors are and how do we fit into somebody's portfolio. So we're building on that. We're in about 10 states as we speak now, so that would be Texas, Florida, some distribution in Wisconsin, Minnesota, California, Arizona, Nevada, Michigan.
I would call that pretty diverse.
It is diverse, and it's by who understands our wines and who sees the hand sell nature of our wine. So it's predominantly geared towards restaurants.
Now that this facility is very, very close to being finished, I believe you're talking about a November completion date, and obviously a certain degree of increasing production, where do you see it going from there?
I think the path that we've chosen to have this rich, interactive hospitality experience, we want to make that even richer. So as you walked around with me earlier in the day, Ray, you saw these private tasting rooms, two in our hospitality house, two in the caves, our event lawn, our grand salon, which allows us to do larger groups for a couple of hundred people. We want to ingratiate ourselves with the community, the Napa community, the fabric of what goes on here. We touched a bit about things like Premier Napa Valley, the Napa Valley Wine Auction, Taste of Oakville, the Napa Film Festival, the V Foundation, all of these activities that bring international travelers, locals, everybody together for wine experiences. we want to play a larger role in those experiences. We have our communal table out, tucked out into the vineyards. We want to do more of those programs, Farm to Fork Fridays. We have an amazing gal on our staff. Her name is Christina McNamara. She's Gordon Ramsay trained. She's a graduate of the Cullinary Institute of America. She was, I call her a survivor of the season 4 winner of Hell's Kitchen. And she's a lot of fun to be with. And we have a program called In the Kitchen with Christina. So that's up to 6 or 8 couples get together. So we'd like to do more of those programs that really allow people to get to know us at a much higher level of personal interaction. And then just kind of do more of the same, but make it highly personal. Just keep what we're doing, stay focused, and get better at it.
Well, I have to say, you've done awfully good up to this point. Just even coming up, the simplicity of my experience so far has been really wonderful. For our listeners who want to come visit Napa Valley and they want to make a reservation here, or they want to check out Bee Sellers Wines online, how would they go about doing that?
So our website is actually a good place to start. So that's www.beesellers.com. Our chef concierge is a woman by the name of Jennifer Hazard. That's jennifer@beesellers.com. That's how you would make a reservation for a tasting. And telephone would be 707-709-8787.
Very good.
Too many numbers in my head.
No, I understand.
Yeah, yeah. So, and we would love to welcome all of your listeners. I think they would find it to be an incredible experience.
Great. Well, I have to say, Duffy, this has been a great experience for me, and I really appreciate you taking the time. I'm sure you're a little on the busy side here, especially right after harvest.
Listen, this is great. Always a chance to meet new friends and carry on the wine tradition.
Cheers. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks.
Learn more about Bee Sellers by visiting beesellers.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our intern is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2014.